That's too many and two's just right. All right. Name's Bill. I'm an addict.
Hey, Bill.
You guys put on a jazz brunch just for me because you know I love jazz. Oh, man, was that special. Thank you. I'm going to tell you about how it was for about 3 minutes, then get into recovery for about 55, if that's okay with you. I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to be a part of. It's quite an honor to speak anywhere on behalf of Narcotics Anonymous. Before I got clean, I was an auto parts specialist, which is a long name for a thief. Yeah. I would travel all over the Southeast in a one-ton truck buying old cores, like your old starters and your alternators and your transmitters. I was a junk man is what I was, but I was an auto parts specialist. You know how we are. I'd gone one day in particular, I'd gone to Savannah and back in this one-ton truck, and I bought half the parts and I stole half the parts, and coming back to Columbus, Georgia, where I lived at the time, I was listening to the World Series over the radio, and Willie Stargell had hit a home run for the Pittsburgh Pirates. In the floorboard, there was an empty case of Budweiser, whatever I was drinking, and the baggies and syringes I threw out the window, you know, just to get normal like you did every day, right? Just to be normal. And I'm listening to this World Series, and he hits that home run, I'm steering, I'm clapping with my hands and steering with my knees, and I tap a little Cordoba right in the ass end, a brand new car, and just barely touch him. He calls the cops, and the cop comes and has me blow up the balloon. I used to practice all those same things you guys do, you know, touching your nose and walking down a white line, see if you can pick up a nickel when you load it, just see how you do. I passed all his tests. And then he had me say my ABCs. I went, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, tell me what you think of me. Hey! He said, you're a wise ass, and I can't get you for being publicly drunk, so I'll get you for reckless driving. So he wrote me up for reckless driving. 2 weeks later, almost to the day, my father gave me a birthday present, and the birthday present was a ride on this chartered bus to see the Atlanta Falcons play football. And on this chartered bus, there's a lot of chartered buses, I took my future ex-wife, who we'll call plaintiff from now on, and on this bus was retired military personnel going to see the Falcons play football. In the back of the bus, there's 2 20-gallon igloo coolers full of Bloody Marys. That's 40 gallons of liquor for the ride up, you know, on this one bus. By the time we got there, and I took my Quaaludes and my Valiums with me because you people made me nervous, you know, all the people on this bus. And that plaintiff always made me nervous. By the time we got there, all the liquor was gone out of these igloo coolers. I don't know who the Falcons were playing. I didn't give a shit who the Falcons were playing by then. Way back, my wife and I argued about who's going to drive. You're too drunk. You're too stoned. You can't see. You know, you're blind. We had to get back. We got back at 3 o'clock in the morning in this parking lot, this grocery store. We had to wait till all the cars were gone to figure out which car was ours. So I won the argument. It's 6 blocks driving home. 3 blocks into it, I make a right-hand turn going down the street. There's a car stopped going the other way at a stop sign. I run head-on into him, head-on collision. My wife's got enough sense to get out of the car and walk home, but 3 blocks away. Same cop from 2 weeks earlier comes up. I roll down the window. I've got a blue plastic Mickey Mouse wallet from Disney World. Belongs to my daughter. Inside is a sheriff's badge from Arizona I picked up in a scrapyard and my driver's license. I flip it open like I'm a cop and show him. I look up at him. Before he can say jack shit, I say, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, tell me what you think of me. He opened up the door, and I fell out in the street. He said, I think you're going to jail. Hey! Now, all my life, I kept using. I'd end up in front of different lawyers and doctors and judges, and they'd give me a bigger fine, more medication. None of them told me to keep coming back until I got here. I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting January 15th, 1983, in Gainesville, Florida. There were 6 people getting clean back then. We didn't have a basic text. We didn't know what we were doing. They had me read at my first meeting who is an addict, and it was on a piece of paper. We didn't have these plastic things and all that. We didn't even have basic text. And I couldn't hold a paper. You know, I rode up there on a Schwinn bicycle. I had a pair of crutches, 1 tennis shoe, and that bicycle. I had army fatigues on. I had a rope for a belt. I couldn't afford a belt. And I stunk. I hadn't bathed or showered in about a week. And 2 women in there hugged me. I said, how? I got it going on. I know they love me here, right? When I read Who Is an Addict, I had to kneel down. I had to lay it on the floor to keep from shaking to death and kneel down and read that. And nobody laughed at me. And they said, welcome home. The war is over. Women hadn't hugged me for a long time when I got to my first NA meeting. And then the men hugged me. I said, something's wrong here. I said, what do these son of bitches want? You know, they want my bicycle. I know what they want. They want my damn bicycle. All they wanted from me was to get a way out just like they had. The guru back at that time had 11 months clean. I didn't know anybody had 11 months clean. You couldn't. I said, he's lying. Ain't no way you can stay clean 11 months. He ended up being my sponsor. Back then, we had one meeting a week, sometimes two, if you remember to pick up the key. And where we had meetings, it was called the Crisis Center. It was a drug hotline, you know, and that's where we were. And this guy's name was Martin. And Martin guided me through the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous as best he could. He had me sit down and write each step, one at a time we would share with each other. And that's what I do with the sponsees I have today. We do one step at a time, and we sit down and share one step at a time. Back then, I thought I was cool. When I was writing, Martin had me look up in the dictionary what cool meant. And I came back and said, not so hot. He said, that's you. You ain't so hot. Today's reading in Just for Today was about pleasing other people. And the last line says about spiritual principles. And we live our lives today with spiritual principles. And to me, behind each step, there's a spiritual principle. I shared this with a friend of mine 16, 17 years ago about, man, I found 12 steps and 12 spiritual principles. And the man at the time helped write the basic text, Greg P., and he said, Bill, there's 278 principles behind the steps. I said, Greg, I'm just keeping it simple. I got 12. I'm getting a hold of here, one on each one, and it's working for me. You know, honesty in the first step. And I don't know how to live without using. I came to my first meeting, and you people hugged me and told me you loved me. And it just blew me away. If you remember your first meeting, somebody hugged you and said, welcome home. You know, and what do they want? We don't feel like we're worthy of love. My home group today is in Galloway, Columbus, Ohio. I live in Galloway, Ohio. It's called the Therapeutic Value Group. We do something there that I haven't seen any other place in Narcotics Anonymous. It's called a writing meeting. We read whatever Just for Today is meditation that day, and we share for 15 minutes with a pen. We write our own experience, strength, and hope for 15 minutes. And that's all you're allowed to share after the meeting starts, and you read what's on your paper. And it cuts out all the bullshit. Because all you're sharing is your own experience, strength, and hope when the topic's read. And last Monday, we had a guy come in late, and there were six of us at this meeting writing. And he comes in and said, man, I just got out of treatment. My name's Bo. I need to talk. And we just looked at him and said, Bo, it's a write meeting. Would you sit down here? And I made him sit down next to me. I said, what we're going to do is write about today's topic. I can't write very well. I said, just write over and over again, I surrender, I surrender, I surrender. And Bo wrote, I surrender five times. He sat there for the meeting, and we talked after the meeting. And he went to a meeting the next day. He said, man, where were you? I said, I told you I'd be at this other meeting. So I got confused. Now, Bo's got like 33 days clean. He's got a way out, you know. Based on life of desperation, now, honesty in the first step, found some hope in the second step when you guys said I could be restored to sanity. Probably the most beautiful movie I've seen since I've been clean was The Color Purple. And I got to see that movie when I had 2 years clean, when it first came out, and the theater was full. And my girlfriend at the time was sitting next to me, and I hadn't cried clean. And I cried five times during that movie like a natural born child. Not these little boo-hoo tears. I'm talking about, and the screaming. And one time, Whoopi Goldberg's got her ass whipped by her old man because she read a letter from her sister in Africa. And she's got to sit on the front porch and shave him with a straight razor. And I'm screaming out, kill the bastard! Cut his throat! Slice him down! My girlfriend kind of moving away. But I got in touch. You know, real men do cry. We wear pink and we eat quiche. And that shit's all right today, you know. The hope in the second step. It gave me a lot of hope, saying maybe it'll work for me. When I left Columbus, Georgia, I moved to Gainesville, Florida, and I left my wife and three children. And I hadn't seen my kids for a while. When I got clean, my children came to spend a Thanksgiving with me at my dad's house, and I had like 11 months clean at the time. And my kids had never seen me clean. And after about the third or fourth day, my oldest daughter came up, Katie, and said, "Dad, you're fun to be around all the time now." I couldn't let that child see me cry. I had to go to the bathroom and cry. About 2 months ago, I was at a convention in Macon, Georgia. And sitting next to me on my left was my daughter, Katie. She's 30 years old, and she stood up for 6 months clean. And I, oh. What a miracle. Her sponsor just called me before I got up here. Bill gave me the phone. I had to go out in the hallway. My life is blessed. God has granted me so much stuff, and it ain't about the stuff. Are you new here? Anybody here with less than 30 days clean, raise your hand or stand up. Anybody here with 30 days or less? All right. Better give her a hug. Somebody hug the brother. Somebody hug the brother. All right now. All right. All right. Welcome home. We're glad you're here. Keep coming back. We need you in our lives. None of it made any sense for me for a while except when they said, "Keep coming back." And they gave me free coffee at the meetings. So I kept coming back. I was so afraid I was going to miss something that would save my life at NA meetings. At the beginning, I'd cross my legs where I'd have to go pee, because I wouldn't pee until the end of the meeting. Then you'd say something about cocaine, I'd have to go shit right away. Some of you know what I mean. You can relate. Faith in the third step. I'm also a recovering Catholic. I used to have nightmares of penguins chasing me down the street, beating the hell out of me with those rulers with the metal strip telling me how much they love me. But I assumed some responsibility for my own life once I got here, and I grew up, and it wasn't nobody's blame. It wasn't the nuns' fault or the Christian brothers or the Jesuit priest. It was my big ass that got myself in trouble. When I got here, I weighed 158 pounds. There's a lot of growth in NA, you know. Auditioning for her first speaker's tape over there, I see. All right, good. Faith in the third step. I happened to sponsor a man for years, like 14 years, a gay man from Memphis named Frank, and I got the permission to share this story about faith. He and I had done a fourth and fifth step when he had like 6 or 7 years clean. We're laying down in this hotel room. We're kneeling down praying at the end of it, and I said, "Frank, you don't have a loving, caring God in your life. Let's change your concept to God." What we thought about and came up with, instead of Frank saying at night, "Our Father," or whoever, he said, "I've got a higher power. It has high heels, wears a dress, has pearls, and it's girlfriend." And when Frank would pray, he would say, "Girlfriend." And for the next couple of weeks, he would call me all around the country, wherever I was going, and say, "Mr. Bill, girlfriend is listening." He would tell me all these things that are like spiritual coincidences. I know they're answers to our prayers. Now, it's a loving God of our own understanding. It says we made a decision in the third step, the hardest decision I've had to make since I've been clean, involved my children. My daughter Katie, and I know I'm skipping around a lot. My daughter Katie, when she was 11, called me up and said, "Dad," and I had 3 years clean, "and Dad, Mom's been beating me with an extension cord, and I got marks all over my leg, and I can't go to school, and I want to come live with you." And there was nothing I could do to bring those children down to me. I tried to get custody of them, and for 9 months, they wanted to take all the kids away from both of us. And I said, "Okay," I just dropped my plea and my legal shit. And at Christmas that year, all three of my kids came and spent 10 days with me in Gainesville, Florida. And the two little ones, Jeff and Bridget, went to meetings every night with me. And I was on one of these special diets, these fad diets, where I was going to lose 30 pounds in 30 days and have any woman in the world just laying in my feet. Pick a color, any color, which one you want, big man. It still ain't happening. And I would come home and I'd look at that icebox and my daughter Bridget would say, Dad, just for today, you don't, what are you, where do you hear that? And she said, at the meeting, if you would have paid attention, you would have heard it too. My kids back then, we would kneel down and say our prayers at night before I put them to bed. Once we clean up, we are great parents. Because we try not to be like our parents, most of us. And most of us hard-ass men in here, all we wanted to ever hear from our dad was, I love you. And we didn't hear that. When I had a year clean, I went and hugged my dad. My dad's a short man. He's 5'9", weighs 320 pounds. He's a retired colonel in the Army. And I hugged him in his front yard and told him I loved him when I had my year medallion. And he started crying. We were groveling like two sumo wrestlers out in the front yard. You know, I love you, I love you, I love you. He had never been hugged in his life, I think. You know, he didn't know about love. And now he hugs his friends and stuff. When I get done here tomorrow, I'm going to go see my dad in a nursing home in Greensboro, North Carolina. He's 84 years old. In December, his kidneys failed, and his feet were swelled up, and he wouldn't quit drinking. And me and my sister and my older brother made him go into the hospital and get tested. And they made him raise his feet up and get all the fluid draining right. And he couldn't wipe his own ass. And when he stood up and he said, I got to go to the bathroom, and he sat there and went to the bathroom and said, how about wiping my ass for me? My dad's a big man, so I'm rolling off this toilet paper, and he's leaning over. He said, come on, I wiped your ass all your life. Come on. I said, man, it don't bother me to wipe your ass. There's a lot of turf here to cover, and I'm getting some material to do it. We come into this world with somebody wiping our ass, and we go out of this world with somebody wiping our ass. And I said, it don't bother me to wipe your ass, man. And I've done so much work with my father. You know, he used to beat me as a kid. He was my hero, and I hated him. Now I can love that man and forgive him. You know, there's a lot of us in here, we learn how to love because we finally forgive people for what they've done. He didn't know how to be a dad. Now, I'm learning from you guys how to be parents. I'm learning we can have kids in here with us, and they can be a part of our lives today. I've got some of the greatest kids in the world, thanks to you people. And you've seen them everywhere. You know, I got diagnosed with hepatitis, diabetes. What the hell else I got? I don't even remember all of them. What is it when your feet are numb? Neuropathy. I got that shit, too. And I said, man, what a blow. And then 2 days later, my first grandson was born. Quest. I said, wow, that's a yin and a yang of life there. And instead of having all these big-ass goals about what I want to do 5 years from now, I said, when he's five, I want him sitting on my belly catching his first fish. That's all I want. My daughter is such a brilliant kid. She's raising this child by herself. He's like a little Tiger Woods, you know. And she's raising this child, big afro and everything, by herself. She's going to college. She's in her master's program at the University of Florida. She's managing my business, and she doesn't use. And she's a terrific kid, unbelievable. And she used to come around the country with me to go to conventions. She was this big. Now she's my daughter. She's a hero to me. My kid is my own hero. I do a lot of step work with the men I love and the men I sponsor, and one of the things it talks about is reservations. And I think one of the reservations I might have is if one of my kids were to go before me. And I've got five guys I sponsor who have lost children and didn't use over it. My own sponsor lost a child and didn't use over it. I know that's probably hitting some people here right now, but there's no reason why we have to use. I know that, but that's probably maybe a reservation. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. And I pray to God it doesn't have to. You know, there's too much joy and too much love in my life to think about things like that. Faith in the third step. When I saw these kids, and I'll go back to where I was now I remember. At Christmas time, Katie had turned 14. And back there, and they lived in Georgia. I lived in Florida. And in Georgia, when you're 14, you can decide which parents you want to live with. And she decided she was coming to live with me. And I had to take these kids back to their mother in Columbus, Georgia, and see these little girls say goodbye to each other. See my son say goodbye to his sister. And I'm crying, they're crying, she's calling the cops. And then back then, I looked like a biker, I dressed like a biker, I had a long beard, I wore a red bandana, and I drove a Toyota truck, you know. truth of the matter is, I hadn't been on a bike since 1971 when I wrecked my brother's Suzuki doing acid. And brought it back up to the front porch and said, here's your bike, man. And when Katie got in the car with me, I said, Katie, one day we'll get back together as a family. And I'm crying. I'm taking this bandana off and drying my eyes. And she snatches it out of my hand, dries her eyes. And 3 years later, Bridget came to live with us, my second daughter. And it so pissed off my plaintiff that she wouldn't let us see my son for 5 years. Every time I'd come to town, she'd hide him and go elsewhere and elsewhere. And you guys told me to pray for the people I had resentments against. I prayed for this woman. They told me a couple weeks, if you pray for them, you feel relief. I've been praying for her for 19 years. You know, every night I'm praying for this woman. And finally, after 5 years, she lets Jeff, my son, come with us to a convention at Thanksgiving time. And he brought out the little boy and me, and we played, and we wrestled, and I hugged him, and I kissed him, and told him I love him. Now my son is graduating from Greenskeeper School. He's going to be a golf course superintendent. He's living his dreams, and he also had a baby 3 weeks ago with his girlfriend. I'm grandpa twice, blessed now. I get to see them on Tuesday for the first time. You know, get to see the little grandbaby. We can be good parents once we clean up our act. We know how to do it. And it's all about love. You know, no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done, we deserve this way of life. Family. I'm probably married to one of the most beautiful women in Narcotics Anonymous. She still calls me a newcomer every night. She's almost got 21 years clean. I'm still a newcomer in her eyes. Her brother is a schizophrenic, and he lives with us, and he's got 20 years clean. And I got to do the dishes. I got to make dinner. You know, all the stuff I love to do. And I love cooking. Big men love cooking. We all do. And this woman was speaking at a convention 14 years ago in Wisconsin. And I'm out in the audience, and I realize, well, that's the woman for me. She was smoking two cigarettes at the same time. I said, man, she's a mess. That's my kind of woman right there. An emotional cripple, in other words, right? We became friends, and she was married at the time. We just became friends, I barely acquaintance. And she got divorced about 6 years later. And for 2 years, she went to live in a cornfield up in Pennsylvania. Where am I from? Ohio. God. And didn't associate with a lot of people. I called her up after she had been divorced for 2 years and said, Leslie, would you like to go out for dinner? Would you like to go on a date? She said, Bill, I haven't been on a date in 10 years. You know, I've been married more times than I've been on dates. This is her fourth marriage. I said, well, let's go out to dinner and have coffee. So we went out to dinner. She doesn't drink coffee. And then we went to a movie. It took me 3 months to call her back to ask for a second date when I was coming through Columbus, Ohio. And I called her back and I said, Leslie, I'm going up to a convention in Minnesota. She said, well, we'll think about that later. I said, well, I'm screwing this story up. So I backed up. After our first date, I came home and I said, I got 2 weeks off in a couple weeks, and I know you're a teacher and you got Easter vacation. There's a convention in Mexico. No, I'm sorry. I'm going on a vacation in Mexico. Would you like to go with me? She ran screaming out of the house, and I took that as a no. And finally, I called her back up, and I said, there's a convention in Minnesota. Would you like to go up there with me? And she said, yes, I'd love to go. And she went up there with me, and we spent a lot of time being friends and learning how to just nurture each other. I didn't kiss that woman for like 6 months. I never did. I would hold her hand. I would listen to her. I'd talk to her. I got to know who she was. Back then, I had an old white Toyota truck, and there was no radio, no cassette, and when you drove with me, we talked and we listened, and it was like a fourth and fifth step whenever you got in the car with me. Wherever you went, I knew who in the hell you were, and you knew who I was by the time we got there. And long story short, I brought her down to Gainesville on the way to a convention in Florida, and I had it all set up like a dope fiend would, going into a pawn shop, and I had the ring her size and a big diamond in it, and I put it on her finger, threw it on her, and she said, what's this mean? I said, well, I guess I'm going to ask you to marry me. And I saw resistance in her face, and I said, you know, not right now, in a couple of years. You know, I backed up, and she said, okay, maybe in a couple of years we'll get married. And And that was July. The next April, we ended up getting married in a place called Callaway Gardens, southwest of Atlanta. It's a beautiful place with 30,000 acres of azaleas and golf courses and ponds. And we invited like 90 of our closest friends in Narcotics Anonymous to come to the wedding. And they came down there, and it was a pristine chapel with all this stained glass. They were beautiful. And we had it was like a convention of what it was with all these 90 addicts everywhere. And we're getting ready to go out in this chapel, and there's a Baptist minister there. We didn't have any kind of religion, but he was a Baptist minister. He said, I don't want any noise out here. This is the house of the Lord. And I said, oh, yeah, there won't be any noise. And these guys out there with camcorders and all the shit going on, and everybody's got flash, you know, pictures and all that. And you walk out there, and you're all screaming and yelling. And he looked at me, and I said, well, we got 28 more minutes. What do you want to do? He said, your book, come on. And we went on out. And her father was her best man. And my father was my best man. Our families were there. You guys were there. The people that are important in our lives were there. And it was a beautiful thing. We get in relationships to heal whatever wounds we grew up with. I mean, we think we're there because it's all about love and infatuation. We get in there to heal ourselves. I don't care who you're married to, who you're going with. It's hard. It's hard being real with people. I don't give a shit. Who you think you're all this spiritual shit and stuff. It ain't. It's hard to live with people. It's hard to let our walls down, become vulnerable, let people know who you are. And we've had some troubles because I'm hardly ever home. I'm on the road a lot, and she teaches, and we spend the summers together. But we're going through something right now where we are willing to get to the other side of it. And that's where if you get to the other side, you find real love. You really do. I mean, it gets through all infatuation, and we learn to heal each other. We both found that we were afraid of being abandoned. We're afraid of being betrayed. We're afraid of being nurtured, asking people to nurture us like we want to be nurtured. Now, when we go to one of the most beautiful things I do with my wife is when we go to bed at night, we say our prayers together, and we're quiet, and we hold hands, and we say our prayers. 12, 13 months ago, we got a little boxer. She weighed about 8 pounds when we got her, and she went to bed with us. Now the boxer weighs 55 pounds. She goes to bed with us every night. The dog prays. I swear the dog prays with us every night. We make some of the most beautiful lovers that I've ever seen in the world, and it ain't about sex. We give real love to each other. Think about how many people you sponsor in your life, how many people you call sponsor. How much love there is, how much that connection is there. What a spiritual awakening it is to realize you can call somebody at any time of the day and let them know what's going on in your life and they become real with you. You know, my wife gave me a book years ago. It's called The Velveteen Rabbit. It's all about this little boy that goes to bed every night with this little rabbit. It's a glove that he wears. And it becomes real because the child loves it, and it becomes real. That's what happens to all of us here. We become real because somebody loved us. We come back and we become real human beings. I know I'm an apprentice human being learning how to do it right with your help every day. Third step is faith. Fourth step, discipline. I had to sit down and write all the defects of character. I write about the resentments. I write about the relationships I've been in. Write about the harm I've done to others. You told me in my first year clean, no relationships for a year. I didn't ask anybody what that meant. So I quit masturbating for 6 months. That was the biggest relationship I had when I got here. And I finally went to my sponsor one night and said, Martin, is this what you mean? He said, no, man, that ain't what I mean. I said, well, can you give me a hand? He said, you are sick. You just keep coming back. He pat me on the back. When I sat down and did my fifth step with my sponsor, I got honest with him. I told him all my secrets, told him all the harm I'd done. And I do that with the men I sponsor now. And he told me all his secrets. And he told me all the harm he'd done, all the resentments he had. He shared his fourth and fifth step with me. And I looked at him and said, man, you're sick. He said, so are you, and that's why we're here. I wanted the men I sponsored to meet each other and see how wonderful they really are and what loving characters and creatures we are, men. You know, we're sensitive people. We really are. We don't like to show it in front of women, but we really are. So I started something 14 years ago called a sponsorship retreat. And at the time, I lived in a double-wide trailer, and I sponsored about 7 men. I asked them to come spend the weekend with me at this double-wide trailer in Florida and bring their sponsees. And the first year, 26 guys showed up. We talked about our heroes. We talked about our dads. We talked about sex as we do or do not understand it. And on Sunday morning, we talked about God as we do or do not understand God. And when we went outside, nobody wanted to leave. He said, let's do it again next year. So we did it again next year. And 62 guys showed up at this double-wide trailer. And 62 guys can't fit in a damn double-wide trailer, you know. So on Saturday morning, and they had the Harleys out front. They had a little tents pitched all around this mobile home park. And on Saturday morning, the trailer court manager comes and knocks on the door and says, Bill, what's going on? I said, well, I'm having 62 of my closest friends over for the weekend. He said, really, what's going on? The neighbors are worried. I said, if they knew where we came from, they should be worried, you know. I said, but when we leave here, their houses will be fine. Their little Dodge Darts on orange crates will still be there when we leave, and none of their children will be vandalized, and their jewelry's, you know. He said, well, next year, how about warning us? Well, we saw that it had outgrown a double-wide trailer, so we rented a state park. And north of town, this last year we had our 13th or 14th one. I'm not even sure which one it was. But there were 252 men showed up at this sponsorship retreat. And it's such a safe, beautiful thing that goes on there. These men become real. And one of the things we do, it's always in December, the first weekend in December, we get a Christmas tree. We have a meeting. We put a little box of sand down there, put this Christmas tree in it. And on Saturday afternoon, I have these grown men make up Christmas ornaments of people that they miss, people who have lost in their lives. And these grown men are doing all these ordinary things with stars and dust and glue, and they make some beautiful shit out of construction paper and scissors and glue, and they'll get up one at a time, put these little ornaments on, and tell everybody else in there why this person should be remembered. And there's not a dry eye in the house. This meeting goes on for 3 hours, and there's so much healing goes on with tears and the love in that room that it's just unbelievable. And it's a highlight. I started looking forward to that meeting in July, and that's in December. And these guys get so damn real, it's scary sometimes. But we'll give out each other phone numbers and addresses after it's all over. And there's a network like that that's unreal. I'll invite five or six people from outside of our what we call the family tree to come every year. And they go do it where they're from. And it's all about love. It's like a pyramid effect. If we were, what do you call that, marketing? I don't know, telemarketing? We are the best telemarketers if we give that love away. As a woman brings a little fat son to see the guru, says, Guru, tell my little fat son to quit eating sugar. It's killing him. And the guru looks at the boy and says, Son, bring your mother back in 2 weeks. So they come back in 2 weeks, and the woman says, Guru, here's my son again. And the guru says, Son, it's time to quit eating sugar now. And the boy says, Okay, he makes a resolution to quit eating sugar. And the mother comes back and says, Why didn't you tell my son 2 weeks ago to quit eating sugar? And the guru said, First, I had to quit eating sugar. I can't tell you what to do as a sponsor if I'm not doing it my damn self. You know, what I'll be doing is perpetrating a lie and a fraud if I'm telling you how to do these steps. And we've got something out now that we've been working on for about 14 or 15 years called the Sponsor Guide to Steps. You know, it's not Sponsor Guide, it's Working Guide to Steps. A friend of mine who's speaking tomorrow morning and I were given a set of these sponsory steps 14 years ago, and we put some input from the woman that I called just a few minutes ago. Three of us put all this input into the sponsory guide, and we had what was given to us on the first step was like 7 questions. It had some emotional sobriety and stuff, so we put that all that out. We cleared that out and made it recovery about Narcotics Anonymous. We changed the first 7 questions in the first step to 31 questions. And we didn't edit each other's stuff out. Whatever came out, we went through. We'd only gone through 6 steps, so we could only change it up to step 6. And then the third step, we put, what is the decision? And 13 questions later, what is the decision? Came up again. We didn't edit it out. And one of the questions was, who is an addict? We made people read the basic text, the first 110 pages, and write down how many times what is addiction? And what we did was make them read the basic text. And there's a lot of us in here have been involved with a lot of literature studies and a lot of things going on. When you had your Unity Day, the World Unity Day up in Vienna, they're working on sponsorship now. It's not an IP, but a book now about sponsorship. And that's the way we used to bring storm literature. We would sit down at conventions, and we'd 12 of us sit at a table, and we'd take a certain aspect of a topic, more people, and then we'd all get together and do that, and then put all the literature and all the stuff together, and then we finally came up with something. And it was neat to be a part of that up in Unity Day. The steps work. I'm also a recovering Vietnam veteran. I was there in 68, 69, and 70. Part of the amends I had to make were to people I don't even know their names. Living amends. I'll get to that in a minute, I hope. 12, 13 years ago, my mom was dying of cancer. I had everybody go in there and say goodbye to my mother. There's only 72 pounds left over, and I had everybody go say goodbye to her. I made my dad go in there and say goodbye. He didn't want to say goodbye to her. I said, get your big ass in there and say goodbye to that woman you've been married to for 36 years. And he went in there and said goodbye. And I went in and said, have I said goodbye? And I went in and knelt by her bed and said, Mom, I love you. And when I'm fishing, I'll probably think of you more when I'm fishing. I'll talk to you when I'm fishing, you know. And I'm probably most at peace at that time. And I could see her in so much pain. I said, Mom, if you want me to, I'll put this pillow over your head. I'll suffocate you. It's okay. I'll let you go now. You don't have to go through all this pain. And she said, no, Billy, I don't want to go through this. And she said, you know, you didn't have a lot of love in your life 4 years ago when you got clean. Now, when you come through going to conventions, wherever you're going, you bring a newcomer with you, and it's like that guy you got out in the front living room right now. He's kind of shaggy and raggedy like he used to be. He said, when you walk in the front door, you say, here's the silverware, here's the checks, here's the cash, here's the liquor. If you want to beat him, take it now and save yourself some time. He said, when you leave the house, all the liquor's there, all the silverware's there. There's no money stolen, and that guy has cleaned up his act, and he shaved his face. She said, I can see a lot of love in your life. And thank God you went to Narcotics Anonymous, Billy. I said, Mom, thank you for teaching me how to love, teaching me how to be real, and supporting me. When I was getting clean, I called up my parents, and they had two phones. And I said, Mom, I'm 158 pounds. I'm dying. I'm going to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And she said, thank God, Billy, you need some help. And my dad was on the other phone. He said, you know, I just read in Time magazine that only 3% of you intravenous users ever get clean, you ain't going to make it. And he slammed that phone down. And that first year, I hung on out of spite. I was going to show that big old fart I could stay clean, no matter, you know. I lost 5 jobs my first year clean, you know, but I kept coming back. I kept coming. I remember going to a meeting one night, and I had like 6 or 7 months clean. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money. I just, somebody in here is going to hire me tonight. I'm going to whip your ass. And then they looked at me and said, man, I need my warehouse swept out. And I went and swept out this guy's warehouse for $5 an hour. And he helped me stay clean. I've been sponsoring that guy now for 15 and a half years. He's been clean ever since his first meeting. When I left my mama's house that night after I said goodbye to her, she's a Mexican. And she's a very devout Catholic, as most Mexican mothers are. They're very devout Catholic and religious people. I'm driving up through Richmond, Virginia, leaving Georgia. I'm going to Boston for the first New England Regional Convention. I see 2 little stars up in the sky. Look like crosses. I'm telling this newcomer with me, that I said, Arnie, my mom just died. He said, how do you know? I said, I got a spiritual umbilical cord, and I just know it's been severed. And I got up there, and I found out she had passed away, and I wasn't going to let these 1,400 recovering addicts in Boston know. And I went to one of the last special interest meetings I've been to was a men's meeting. And they asked me to get up and share, and I shared that my 14-year-old daughter got loaded that week. There was nothing I could do the next morning except wipe her forehead and tell her how much I loved her. And said, Katie, it'd be a different town, a different toilet 20 years from now if you keep using. You don't have to. I shared that my relationship at home with my girlfriend was on the rocks, and I didn't want to stay there. I shared that my mom had passed away. I didn't want to tell any of you men about my mom passing away. And I'm crying. There's a guy down here doing signs. Because up in New England, they got a lot of recovering death addicts. And they do signs at the meetings. He's doing signs. He's crying. I'm looking down at him. And I look up, and all these hard-ass bikers and these guys from New York City and Boston, Philadelphia, they're crying too. You know, no matter what's going on in my life, if I share it with you, I divide my sorrow. Now, if I tell you how happy and beautiful life is, it multiplies the smiles in my life. You know, that's the way we do it. It works that way. No matter what I'm going through, I got to tell you guys what I'm going through. That was a relief. Sitting here this morning, Erica. I gave Erica a white chip 13 years ago. He's still clean. He's probably a multimillionaire. You know, it ain't about money. Eric's got himself back today. Eric's got Eric back today. We live in different towns, different places and all that, but we see each other once in a while. He's telling me about his son's real grandfather passed away. He's telling me, and I'm choking on this piece of egg while I'm trying to eat this morning, I'm saying, get him a book called The Fall of Freddie the Leaf. And it's by Leo Biscaglia, the Doctor of Love. And it tells all about this life and death of a leaf. And what it is, it teaches children about our purpose and why we were here. And the purpose of this leaf is to give shade to the old people. It's to give wind. It's to give, all the things about this leaf, the life and death of this leaf. And it's all about a new beginning. When the leaf dies, it goes into compost in the ground. The tree grows bigger and stronger. And I give this book to grown men when they lose loved ones. And it teaches you about why we're here. Why are you here? We're here to love each other. We're here to grow. We're here to be beautiful people that we really are. Now, once we get old, our little edges are worn out, you know, and our hair starts falling out, we start sporting a sag and shit. You know, that's because we're well-loved. You know, we're well-cared for. I wouldn't be anywhere else. I couldn't think of another place to be right now. Surrounded by those that we love. Have I talked a long time already? Have I? Okay, thanks for sharing. Thanks for being honest. You know, I'm going to skip. Okay, I'll go up to the 11th step as a power of prayer. If you ask everybody in here, how do you meditate and how do you pray, they're all right. You know, we all have different ways to meditate and pray. Whenever I do a third step or a seventh step with the men I sponsor, we kneel down and pray. I'll make them do their own third step prayer, and I'll do my own third step prayer. And we'll kneel down wherever it is, in the state park, in the hotel. I did one in Rochester, New York with a sponsee of mine from Quebec, Canada a couple weeks ago. We knelt down in the lobby of this hotel, and we're doing our third step prayer. He said, there's people everywhere. I said, they don't care. They'll go right around us. So we knelt down and prayed, and a couple people just stopped and put their hands on us, and it was okay. You want to feel it. You want to come speak? Whose phone? Oh, okay. The power of prayer. It leads to the 12th step, and the principle behind the 12th step is love, and that's service. Service and love are synonymous with one another. I met a guy in prison 15 years ago, and he asked me the most important question you could ask at an NA meeting. He said, how do you guys stay clean? And back then we had a black and white version of It Works How and Why. And I said, Rick, this is how we stay clean. We write and work the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And Rick picked that book up and read through it. He said, I got to quit smoking pot too. And I said, yeah, it's all about abstinence. Rick's got 15 years clean. You know, before he'd have to call me from the prison to collect from the town right there and get me to come pick him up and take him to a meeting. I'd come pick him up, and he wouldn't share at the meeting. I'd throw my sandals at him. Your turn to share, Rick. My name's Rick. I'm an addict. I'm glad to be here. Now you can't shut him up, you know. He's been H&I chair for our area. He sponsors people. He's going through a tough time right now. You know, we all go through emotional times where we get divorced and we lose loved ones and all that, but he ain't got to pick up. He ain't got to use. You know, that's the way it works. I went to my first convention. You guys were 30 days less clean. I went to my first convention. I had a year and a half clean, 17 and a half years ago. And I thought there was 14 recovering addicts in the whole state of Florida. I went to Tampa, Florida to a Frickman. There was 1,400 recovering addicts. And it scared the shit out of me seeing all these recovering addicts. And I walked by the swimming pool. This big old biker from Kentucky came up and hugged me and kissed me on the lips. I said, I ain't taking that shit. And I kissed him right back. And I got his phone number. They had asked me to share years ago in a little place called Bowling Green, Kentucky. And my kids, when they were small, were with me. And I had written a song called Just for Today. And when I got done speaking, I sang the song. They didn't get to hear me sing the song. 2 weeks later, I was in a little town called Lebanon, Pennsylvania. And I was at a church meeting where they had me speak at this church NA meeting they had. And when I got done, I sat down and Bridget and Jeff said, Daddy, you didn't sing. And Bridget came up afterwards and said, Daddy, you need to sing. And I said, no, I'm already through. And the chairman came up and said, Mr. Bill, go ahead and sing. So I sang this song called Just for Today. And when I got done, Bridget came up and said, Daddy, don't sing no more. I'm going to sing for the beautiful little child right here. This song's just for you. You know, if you haven't heard what you needed to hear today, please keep coming back. You're going to be surrounded by people that love you. And we need you in this fellowship. We need you in our lives. Please hug us. You know, you never can tell how much you're helping the old timers.